I would like to begin this whole thing with a guided meditation. That's what I feel led to do. So, if everybody would do me a favor, I know this is going to be kind of weird, but I just picked this up at a retreat not long ago, and everybody lean forward in your chair, and now slide your ass back into the back of the chair. Now sit all the way straight up. Okay, and you have a straight spine, and instead of putting your toes down, which causes your feet to bounce or your legs to bounce like me, put your feet flat on the ground, right? And now we're gonna close our eyes and we're gonna relax and we're gonna take it easy. And we're gonna simply allow everything to be just as it is, internally and externally. And we're going to become aware of our toes, our feet. They carry us all the time and we never think about them. Tops of our feet, our ankles. And we're going to relax them. We can become aware of our shins and our calves, the muscles in our legs, our kneecaps, our upper legs. We're going to relax them. Become mindful of your sit bones, your hips, your stomach, your chest. Maybe you can feel your heartbeat. Think about all the organs that are working for us that we really have nothing to do with. We're going to relax our torso. Become aware of your hands. Take them for granted. Our wrists, our forearms, and our elbows, our biceps, our triceps, our shoulders. We're going to relax. Become aware of your neck, your jawline, your teeth, your tongue, your lips, your nose, your eyes, your ears. We're going to relax, allow them to be. I'm going to pray. Spirit, we are so easily shaped by what we believe others are thinking about us. Even in recovery and around our very loved ones, we say and do things to seek approval and validation. Please remove our attachment to being seen and glorified. Take away our reputations that we may become vehicles for your humility and love. Take away our pride, especially around recovery and spirituality. Place in us a readiness to change our point of view. Please give us a heart that has nothing to protect. Please allow us to see the truth that our happiness does not come from others or outside of us. Please give us awareness and insight to see when we are self-consumed and performing. Show us when we are being driven by self so that we may return to your infinite presence. Please make us anonymous in your service work so that your power may be revealed. Thank you for the unbearable pain that led us to your perfect peace. Thank you for your divine guidance and relentless patience. Thank you for this beautiful path of awakening and recovery. Show us how we can best serve you by serving those we exclude. Your will, not ours. Amen. Okay. Thank you, guys. So I'm asked to speak on that which I do not comprehend and never will fully understand. And I thought I would talk about my initial experience with what I was introduced to God to be. Okay? And I just read this thing not long ago that talked about whatever in your formative years, whatever you're told about God is going to be the filter and the lens that no matter where I am in my spiritual journey for the rest of my life, I will always compare notes to that. I'll always go back to this thing that I was taught in my childhood. And when I read that, it was kind of like reading the doctor's opinion, because it finally, I felt like, oh shit, okay, this continues to happen to me all the time. I'm questioning my religious doctrine that was pumped into my head as a child. All right, so I just want to give a brief description of what that looked like for me. I was raised by fundamentalist evangelicals who believe that the Bible was the infallible word of God. Okay, and I was taught in heaven and hell, a place that we were going to go. I was taught in a reward and punishment system, right? And I was told that if you believe this one certain thing and do this, then you are a chosen select, and you get to go to heaven with Jesus and with us, our family, and everybody else is going to burn in a lake of fire forever. This is my introduction to God as a child, okay? And I was taught beyond that, that at any given moment, Jesus was going to come back. And if you were not ready, if you didn't make this decision, that you were going to be left behind, and everybody else, the chosen few, would be taken away to heaven forever, and everybody else is going to, you're here to deal with the Antichrist, and then burn in a lake of fire. Essentially, these were the options in my formative years. Okay, and I want to share this because I've never shared this with anybody, because I had read about traumatic abuse being suppressed into the unconscious mind, and I remember reading, and this even happened to one of my friends, and I thought, man, that's crazy. That people would do that. And then just this past year, I was driving down the road, and I remembered something from my childhood, and I didn't have any recollection of it before. And this is what it is, okay? I was homeschooled in New York City. My father had given his life to his higher power, which is how I have to say that and how I see it today. And so he was busy in his ministry, and my mother was homeschooling us. And my mother had a very abusive childhood, and she was not the kindest person with her words. And I realized that today through doing inventory and seeing that she didn't have any other option, right? But in this specific event in my life, we would gather with other homeschooled kids, other weirdos, and we gathered, and my parents raised me without television, without any Nintendo, without secular music, without any of the stuff of the world, because it was all of the world and all of Satan. And so my father came home with this educational, like, gaming system. And to me as a child, as a little 5 to 6 year old, I don't even remember how old I was specifically, but there was this this thing that made me feel like my cousins who had Nintendos and all the other kids in the world, right? And so I had this gaming system, and I was so proud of this thing. These other kids came over, these homeschool kids came over, and there was two little girls there and this other older kid, and something happened with the kid. The older kid was trying to play with the game. Okay, he took the controller from me, and I was trying to show him something, and next thing I know, he slammed me on the ground. And then he stomped on my chest and knocked the breath out of me. And I began to cry, and the two little girls started laughing at me. Okay? And in this moment, I was dumbfounded. I couldn't believe this was happening because I had a little crush on these two little girls. And I got up and ran into the other room, and my mother was there with the other women, the other mothers. And I said, "Mommy, Mommy, this is what happened." And I looked at her, and she was so embarrassed of my behavior because I was bawling. And she pulled me aside and said something like, "You're embarrassing me. Why are you? Don't do this. Don't act like this." And she sent me to my room, and I came back out, and my mom had had an animosity towards that machine. She's always been like this my whole life because she thought it was of the world. And she ended up giving that machine to that boy, and she sent it off. And I went back to my room. I went back to my room. And this is, and I say all of this to paint the picture because this is my first remembrance of dialogue with something outside of myself. Okay? This is the birth of conscious contact. And I know that sounds crazy, but I want to read what Bill says, Carl Jung says about this psychic change. And he says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them. And this is precisely what happened, okay? Because in this moment, I went up to my room, and I went into my head. I went to the place where I believe God exists, and I said this one question, and I carried this question all the way up until that question changed. And the question is, why the fuck is this happening to me? And it birthed the role of the victim. Okay? And this is where the bedevilments come from, right? The bedevilments are expressed through this one idea. I'm not good enough. I didn't ask for this. I never chose to be here. If this is God, then fuck you and fuck life. I don't want anything to do with this. And I was clearly, in my little mind, I thought, I'm one of the punished ones, and the sense of unworthiness was plagued me in everything I did. Okay? And the only time it ever went away in the course of my existence was when I found needle dope. Okay? Because I had that same reverse. Okay, that reversal where my change in concepts and ideas were cast aside. It gave me the thing that I didn't even know I was missing. Alright? And I say all of this because more than anything in God either is or he isn't in that paragraph. I'm going to read that too, actually. There's a line before that. It says, "When we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be?" And when I got to this point that God is either everything, there is no way that God could be this. There's no way that God can be this this destruction towards a little boy. Right? And I really struggled with this early on in the book, so much so that I just pretty much ignored that entirely. Right? But what I see today is the necessity for suffering or this moment of disorder. Right, I have to start in this thing of order and then fall into this disorder or this chaos or this complete defeat. And that's what happened to me all the way up until I found this other, till I found dope. And then eventually I became crushed by the self-imposed crisis. Okay, and I think that the realization that I have done this to myself is actually a change in consciousness and actually the seed of conception for God. Because that really, what I've come to find today is that God is not a person, place, or thing. God is not a noun. Okay? This is what I was taught. That God was this thing outside of me. Right? And if I said the prayer correctly, God would come into me, and then I would be whole and part of the crowd. Right? Part of the select. And this idea is set aside in the chapter of the agnostic, because the book says God is fundamentally located in one place and one place alone. It's deep down inside of us. okay? God is always with us. God has always been part of me because the very consciousness of my being is in fact God. Okay? That's what I see today, but I cannot see it. I cannot see it. And this is what I really felt led to talk about. This is my experience in coming around to that, is because if God is the power that I must find in order to be able to not use, and God is in me, God is deep, fundamentally deep down with inside of me, that means that God is also deep down inside of my mother and inside of you, inside of every other person that I resent and hate. Okay? And the closest I will ever be to this power, closest I will ever be to God, is the farthest I am away from any one of God's kids. Period. Period. This is why I can't access the power. This is why I do not have the ability to see the truth and feel the connectedness and oneness that's always there. Right? I just read this thing from Emmett Fox. He said, God does not do anything to us. God does not do anything for us. God only acts through us. That's it. Right? Which would be the purpose of the steps. The rest of the work. And so, when I do inventory on my mother, okay, my sponsor made me. He sat down with me and he said, I want you to close your eyes and think about your ex-girlfriend sleeping with your coworker. He said, I'm going to practice something outside of the realm of the 12 steps. Are you okay with it? I just come in off a relapse. I said, dude, I'll do whatever. I don't know. You tell me what to do. And he said, I want you to think about that girl sleeping with your coworker. Don't. And then he said, when you're there, let me know. And my ears started burning. I started getting angry. And he said, don't think about them. Think about that feeling. Just the feeling. Let me know when you're thinking about the feeling. And I said, all right, I'm there. And he said, when's the first time you remember that? And I said, I opened my eyes and I said, it was towards my mother. But for 30 years, I couldn't remember why. Right? And so when I sat down and did inventory, what I finally saw was the truth about my mother's upbringing. She was sexually and physically abused. To this day, her mother still has cut her out of her life. Right? She's separated from her maternal mother, and she feels this sense of unworthiness. She was ragged out in school in Trinidad. She was made to stand in the corner and wear a dunce hat while everyone ridiculed her. Right? This is what she grew up with. My mother doesn't have the awareness to act in any other way. She didn't know. And when I began to see that and then began to look at the fact that I made a decision based off self that I'll get to have my way no matter what, and everybody else does what I want them to do. And if you do not do that, then you're cut out of my life and you're the enemy. And I made that decision as a 4 or 5 year old. Okay? And when I come to this realization that I am crushed by this thing that I did to myself, okay, that question begins to change, and that question goes from, why is this happening to me? And it says it in there as a solution. Why is this happening to me to, what do I have to do to make this stop? That simple change in consciousness is God. That's it. Right? That begins to be the thing where I change direction, and it doesn't look like it in the beginning. But I believe that that's what it is. And I think I might be all I have to say. I felt like there was some other stuff I was supposed to say, but I want to make it known to mostly that when I came around to this realization with my mother, the only way that I gained access again to this power or to this this perspective change, which is really what I'm after, right, is seeing the truth about myself and about my mother. Again, this ability to see clearly what was always there is what I would call God. God is this flashlight that gives me the ability to see what was always there, okay? And it's through the work, which is through God working through me, that I'm able to see clearly. And if I only stop there, I don't heal, because what I have to do is go to my mother and confess what I have done that was wrong, right? And in doing so, I suddenly find this healing power, right? Both in her life and in my life. And suddenly, the idea to use is no longer there, right? And I did it with my mother, but I wouldn't do it to that girl. And for two years, in recovery, and Tarek was talking about this because we were in the same group, I was so restless, irritable, and discontent because I still had a tiny little hardened heart, right? And I kept it isolated from, I opened it up here and there, but I would not do it in this other area. And again, I could not access the power, not fully. And eventually I would do it, and I would go down the list in my inventory and in my amends process and start to make it right. And slowly, I start to gain more and more access to the power, right? And Craig talked about this. I became a zealot, and I became the very thing I hated the most in my religious upbringing. I became a zealot for this book. I would go to middle of the road AA and thump the book. All right, you guys are fucking idiots. You're doing it wrong. Right? That was my mission almost. Right? And I did the same thing. I became this outsider walking to the meeting. Nobody wants to talk to that guy. Right? And what's come around to me lately has been like, I made I did a lot of inventory on people and institutions, and I did a lot of amends to people, but these institutional collective resentments towards organized religion, right, towards middle-of-the-road AA, towards the one-liners, towards rehab, towards people making money off addicts, I had a hardened heart towards all these other agencies and corporations and all these things. And again, I see this today, right, that I have to come around and soften my heart for this, for these other people, right? And I really feel like the only way I get there, right, is to recognize this suffering, right, and how necessary it is, because I will tell you many times in recovery, years down the road, where I'm asking, whenever I'm asking myself, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? I'm in this period of disorder again, right? I'm in a period of disorder and powerlessness, where I see again the truth that I'm not in control. I'm not in control. And how necessary this is for me to come around to a fuller, more deeper understanding of love and humility, right? Because I have some section of my heart which is closed off, right? And I'm going to tell one last story and then I'm going to stop talking. I was listening to Sandy Beach. I was driving down the road and I was listening to Sandy Beach. He was giving this conference. He was giving this talk about to these guys, this Four Corners Retreat in the Midwest. And he has, like, when I heard Sandy Beach give his conference, like, the whole thing's on Spotify, and I was just intrigued by his lightheartedness. He had so much fun. He did little silly things like stretching with the guys. And he said, I'm going to pass out these papers in an envelope, and I want you to write this thing out for me. He gave everybody a pen, and he's up there talking, and he says, I want you to write a letter to your heart. Okay, write a letter to your heart. And I want you to write any way that you've harmed your heart. And I had to, I own a property in Atlanta, and I was trying to get my mail forwarded to my residence in Virginia. I paid for it online, but I really don't trust the United States Postal Service at all. So I thought to myself, I'm going to send a letter to my address in Atlanta and see if it gets sent back to me in Virginia. And I had a million things to do that day, and I was getting ready to run out the door, and I was like, and it dawned on me, why don't you write a letter like Sandy Beach? Why don't you write a letter to your heart? Nah, that's stupid. That's what I told myself. And then I said, nah, just do it. Just write it. Just do it. And so I sat on the edge of my bed with a bunch of shit to do for the day, and I sat down and I started to write this letter to my heart. And there was two parts to Sandy's thing, and I wrote this letter, and it said something like, you know, I never listened to you my whole life. I put you in a tiny little box and I kept you away from everybody. And I didn't want you to get close to anyone because I knew that you were the reason why I got hurt. I said something along those lines. Right? In every relationship I ever showed up in, I blamed you and I kept you from the people that I wanted to get closest to. Right? And then Sandy said something to the guys, and I couldn't remember it, and to this day I still don't remember. But what I think he said was, in the next part, make amends to your heart. Or write a reason. Tell your heart why you're so sorry and why you forgive them. Ask for the forgiveness of your heart. And I started to write this thing, and it said, I'm so sorry for the way I treated you. You were a tiny little boy, and you were so scared, and I kept you in a box based off this one experience. And I kept you from everyone, and I want to let you know that I'm going to be open to you today, and I'm going to listen to you, and I'm going to allow you to get close to people. And it was right in the middle of some kind of writing like that that I realized I was making amends to God. Okay, that this thing deep down inside of me, this thing that I can feel and shift and move, is actually the power that's always there. Right? I became connected to this oneness that is always there. And this thing, I'm telling you, I began to weep on my bed. I felt the nearness of my Creator in a way that I can't even explain, because when I wake up to this truth, that the thing in me that recognizes God is the very thing in God that recognizes me. Okay? And there is no separation. And the same thing would go for each and every one of you, right? When I'm connected to that, I'm connected to you regardless of anything, right? And the other thing I want to really say that has opened my eyes and sent me into another direction, the book begs of us in two places. One is in chapter 5, and the other time the book begs us to do anything, which is really contrary to working with others. It really, the book says, when you're working with a newcomer, don't beg them to do shit. That's God's job. They're ready or they're not. It's not my job to convince them that they have to go down this path, right? But in the chapter of the agnostic, it says, we who have been down this dubious path, this doubtful path that looks like bullshit, we beg you to lay aside your prejudice even against organized religion, which was the other part of my heart that I said, I'm not doing that. I found my path, you can have yours, and it's stupid, but I'm not doing that. And that's how I felt. And it wasn't until this last year, man, I'm telling you, I said, okay, all right, God. And so much so where I would go to a random church and pray the set-aside prayer and walk in, and guess what? Every time I've done that, in all these different denominations, I have felt the presence of God like I was at the best AA meeting or DAA meeting ever. Over and over and over, I keep finding the same, and I start to wake up to the truth. I'm just like these people. They're seeking a power in their own way. And this happens to be the language that they can hear and access the power. That's it. And again, the softening in my heart and the opening in my heart takes place, right? And suddenly, I'm here in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, right, and connected. Thank you, guys.
Hi, guys. My name's Bree. I'm a drug addict. Hi. I could throw up and it would be a great show. That's where I'm at right now. I am a baby at this. I'm only 2 years and 7 months clean. I feel like I know nothing most days, and most of you probably know a lot more than me. I may not have anything to offer you, but I'm going to try. The guy who asked me to speak on this topic, ironically, was with me in my first 60 days clean. Well, no, my first 6 months clean for sure. And he would talk to me about God, and he would talk to me about meditation, and I would roll my eyes and walk out of the room and tell him he's an idiot, like I did everybody else. And I am ill-prepared, and I have no book, and I have nothing written down, because ironically, I am a bartender. That's my career. So God has to be with me, right? Because I throw things at people that I can't have every day, all day. also do to-go food, which is what there is in COVID right now, is alcohol and taking food home. Like, that's all that there is. I'm going to talk to you about how I found God and how my first sponsor dropped me off at his doorstep. She sat me down and she handed me a pen and a piece of paper and she said, I want you to write the characteristics of God and what it would look like if he was the author of your life. I wrote generic things, you know, a good job, talk to my kids, a good relationship, all the things that we want in the beginning, right? And it's so, I still have it and I read it now and it was so minuscule, you know, in comparison to the things that he's given me. And I did what most drug addicts do, and I took it to the extreme. I couldn't function if I didn't wake up in the morning and, you know, turn my will and my life over, which is what we're supposed to do. But like I said, I took it to the extreme, and if I stubbed my toe that day, I did something wrong, and God was punishing me, right? If I lied, my car wouldn't start, you know? And God became a parent for me, a parent that I never had, a parent that taught lessons. When I did the right thing and I lived in his will, I was happy and I was productive and everything was good. When I did the wrong things, my car didn't start. I was miserable. I was up awake crying at night. So it became my first healthy relationship with someone who could teach me and I could learn and I could grow with. And that's how that started for me. And I teetered this really thin line between fear and obedience with God. That's how it was for me. I knew that his path was right. Most of the time, I didn't care. And I either wanted the easier the way or the way that brought me less pain. And that's never how it's worked out. So I did that, and I did the characteristics of God, and I did how God was the author of my life. And that's where I lost most of the fear that comes with being new in recovery. And I don't. Like I said, I'm ill-prepared, and I had a million things that I wanted to say to you, and naturally I didn't write any of them down, and I get up here, and I don't know anything to say. I don't know much. I do know that God is either everything or he isn't, because whenever I slip and I don't do the things that I'm supposed to do, I slip back into the misery that I had before. Also, the relationship that I had with God took away my ability to be the victim because it brought me to a fourth step, and it made me learn my part in everything. So when I'm mad at the lady in front of me at the grocery store, what do I hear in my head? Like, what is your part in this? Are you impatient? You know what I mean? You guys bear with me. I'm so horrible at this. I just can't. I don't think that I'll ever begin to understand, like, what God is and what he does, but I do know that I'm just a little girl from the trailer parks of West Tennessee, and I have 2 years and 7 months clean by his grace. And I have taken other women through the steps and through situations that I couldn't have gotten through without God. I know that I wake up every day clean and not scared, and I have an irreplaceable peace. And I don't know how the fuck it works, and I don't know why. And I don't know why I'm standing here, and a lot of the people that I started this journey with aren't. I'm thankful that I was given a manual, which is the book of AA, that tells me how to wake up, how to go to sleep, to shut my mouth when I'm mad, to stop trying to make everybody act the way that I want them to act. I don't really know what else there is for me, other than just waking up every day and turning over my will and my life. And I'm sorry that I'm horrible at this, and that's all I've got. Yeah.